Okay, may the beings of the lower realms too obtain precognition and mantra, and may they attain human or celestial birth and generate bodhicitta. May they repay my kindness through spiritual practice, and may they take me as their teacher and rely upon me. Okay, so may the beings of the lower realms who suffer so much, who are so ignorant, may they obtain various, you know, spiritual faculties such as clairvoyant powers and the ability to use mantra. May they attain rebirth as human beings or celestial beings or in pure lands. And may they generate bodhicitta, that the supreme intention for enlightenment. May they, by having faith in us as their spiritual teacher, may they have a wish to repay our kindness. And how do they repay our kindness? May they rely on us and practice the Dharma. Okay, so here we're generating the aspiration, you know, through the practice that we're doing now, may we gain the realizations of the Bodhisattva path. And when we do, may we become a teacher for all of those beings. May they see us as their teacher. May we be a fully qualified Mahayana and Vajrayana teacher. And may other beings rely on us. And through this prayer and these connections, may we lead them on the path. Yeah? And I think that's especially good to pray, you know, for the people that we're close to when they pass away. You know, pray for their good rebirth, and then pray, you know, through the power of my practice in future lives when we meet, may I lead them on the Dharma path. So instead, you know, your parents or siblings or dear friends who aren't Buddhist, you know, just think, you know, we have a karma connection this lifetime. So in future lifetimes, by the power of my practice now, and the power of this karmic connection, may I introduce them to the Dharma and lead them on the path. And that gives us some impetus to try and practice the path now, because we're really thinking of people that we care dearly about, you know, and them having to take rebirth. And how in the world is it going to be best to benefit them? Or even before they take rebirth, if we really want to benefit the people we love dearly, what's the best way to benefit them? Isn't it by sharing the Dharma with them in, you know, either a small way or a big way? Okay? So really making our relationships meaningful and useful for other sentient beings. Okay. At this time, may all beings of the higher realms too thoroughly meditate on the no-self, just like myself. And without conceptualizing the duality of existence and pacification, may they enter the meditative absorption of their equanimity. Okay, so the previous verse was about the beings of the lower realms. This verse is about the beings of the upper realms. So at this time, may all the beings of the higher realms too, so that's the human gods and demigods, thoroughly meditate on the no-self, just like myself. So may they meditate on selflessness, on emptiness, okay? And without being distracted by sense pleasures, without being distracted by a lot of conceptualizing thought, may they gain actual realization of emptiness. So it says, without conceptualizing the duality between existence and pacification. So here, the word existence means different things in different contexts. Here, existence means cyclic existence. Pacification means nirvana. Okay? So it's talking about samsara and nirvana, and without conceptualizing their duality. Now, what in the world does that mean? Because samsara and nirvana are pretty different, aren't they? They're very different. If you're in samsara, you're not in nirvana. And if you're in nirvana, you're not in samsara. They're very, very different, okay? Samsara is the first two noble truths. Nirvana is the last two noble truths. So, you know, aren't they totally separate? Aren't the causes of them totally separate? What does it mean about not conceptualizing their duality? You know, are samsara and nirvana one? People throw this around all the time. Oh, samsara and nirvana are one. What does that mean? What does that mean? It means I can have my samsara and my nirvana at the same time. You know, I can break all my vows and have all the sense pleasure I want and still get enlightened. You know, that's what people think. That's rubbish. Okay, that's total rubbish. You know, causes of samsara are totally contradictory to the causes of nirvana. So what does it mean, not conceptualizing their duality? So not seeing either one of them as inherently existent. Okay? In other words, samsara and nirvana are established conceptually in relationship to each other. You can't establish samsara without establishing nirvana, or vice versa. Okay? Because it's like you can't establish long without having short to compare it to. You know? Or you can't establish, you know, purple without having non-purple to compare it to. So, you know, things are established conventionally in relationship to other things. But what it's talking about also, when it talks about without conceptualizing their duality, it means that while conventionally samsara and nirvana exist, ultimately they are unfindable. Okay? Ultimately, they have no ultimate existence. Okay? They conventionally exist, but they don't ultimately exist. Yeah, they exist on the level of appearances, but when you search for a real solid thing that's samsara, it evaporates. When you search for a real solid thing that's nirvana, it also evaporates. So don't just go on this thing of, yeah, samsara is empty, but I've got a real inherently existent nirvana here. No, nirvana is not inherently existent either. Okay, it's empty. Even emptiness is empty. Yeah. Anything you look at doesn't have findable nature when you're looking for some essence that is it. Okay? So when it says, and without conceptualizing the duality of existence and pacification, may they enter the meditative absorption of their equanimity. So their equanimity or impartiality means that from the ultimate viewpoint, in terms of their ultimate nature, samsara and nirvana cannot be distinguished because they're both empty of inherent existence. In other words, their mode of existence of both of them is empty, even though conventionally they can be distinguished. Okay? So may we enter into, or sentient beings enter into the meditative absorption of their equanimity, meaning may we see both samsara and nirvana as empty of inherent existence. Okay? So while conventionally they're opposite, they're dual, they're contradictory, ultimately, the mode in which they exist is without independent essence. Okay? And so in that way, you know, the hell realms and the god realms and the table and the chair and the dog and the camel and, you know, George Bush and everybody else, all our ultimate nature is exactly the same. It's empty of inherent existence. But conventionally, we appear quite differently. Okay? So this is, you know, aspiring for the beings in the upper realms to gain this realization. So here in the text, we're beginning to talk about what's called the ultimate bodhicitta. Until now, we've been talking about conventional bodhicitta. Conventional bodhicitta means the aspiration to attain enlightenment in order to benefit all sentient beings. Ultimate bodhicitta means the wisdom that realizes emptiness. So here we're entering the verses about ultimate bodhicitta.